You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dahati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Hey everybody, welcome to another but a different episode of the New Churches Podcast. For some of you, you already know the news. Some of you don't know the news, but today's episode is going to be, remarkably different. So in the course of this podcast, you've heard the voice of Clint Clifton on many occasions, and Clint actually runs this endeavor that we do in and around the New Churches Podcast. And Clint has actually been in an accident and died just, at the time of this recording, just the week before. And we want to share a little bit about that news with you. But then I want you to hear that we're going to talk about some of the things that we know that Clint valued and walk through some of those things together. Matter of fact, the title of this episode, we have titles and our team puts these together, our team, all of which is grieving, but really wanted to do this episode. So this episode is What Clint Clifton Would Want You to Know About Church Planting. So to have this episode work, I brought in some friends who actually worked closely with Clint. And one of them, of course, is Trevin Wax. Trevin serves as a vice president at the North American Mission Board, actually oversaw this area that included the New Churches Podcast. And then we also have Colby Garman. He's the pastor at the Pillar Church of Dumfries, which was actually founded by Clint. And Colby, I know you are, even as we're recording this, we're still walking through some of these, these difficult realities. Would you tell us a little bit about what happened, and then let's just kind of start from there, and just what happened, and then after you share what happened with the accident, share a little bit about Clint, his family, and the situation we're in right now.
Yeah, Friday morning we found out that Clint was missing, and his wife had contacted me, and over a few hours, it unfolded that, he had been working down in Atlanta at North American Mission Board and was on his way back to actually join me and his son and a couple others on a trip to Iceland to continue to work with our church planters there. And he had recently gotten his pilot's license and had a passion, if you knew him, for learning how to fly. And so he had taken his personal plane. And we found out, through the course of the morning on Friday that he had had the accident late Thursday evening when his plane crashed in Dawson County, Georgia. And so just, there aren't a lot of details about how all that happened and that sort of thing. And a lot of that is beside the point, really, at this point. But just such a tragic loss. I mean, it just hit, of course, their family and our church. And then you could just see the tidal wave of grief and loss, spread throughout those who have worked with him and loved his work as well. And, we're just, slowly trying to come to grips with the big hole that he has left in all of our lives. He's got a beautiful family. His wife, Jennifer, a deep love for the Lord, has just been such a loyal-hearted, faithful partner in his life. She's just shown incredible strength, but feels the effect of that loss. So they've been raising five kids together, and their oldest son Noah, who's 20, all the way down to their youngest Moses, and two foster children they were raising currently. It's been a real difficult couple of days, but we've also seen God's grace just give strength. And so, we're just appreciative of all the prayers and support and the outpouring from the community and his professional community. So,
yeah. And Trevin, that's partly where you come in as well. So when the New Churches Podcast was moved over to the Send Network, I don't think you were there yet, but Clint and I started working on the process, and then you came in and you kind of oversee that whole area. And you actually were with Clint on the day he died. I mean, from the meetings there and making plans and all this sort of stuff. Tell us about some of the working relationship and the friendship that grew.
Yeah, you know, I probably on this call am the one who knew Clint the least amount of time, just a couple of years. But he was part of my team from the very beginning when I came to NAMM a year and a half ago, and we wound up. It was a privilege working with him over this period of time. He's just a genius at church planting, at residency, and also just practically constantly doing what he was talking about. So it wasn't just theory. It was connected to practice and passion. Last week we had lots of meetings in Alpharetta. We wound up, spending a good part of the week together, pretty much most of the day, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, we were in meetings together. Wednesday evening had dinner as a team. Thursday morning did a bunch of brainstorming, in part about the future of new churches and the New Churches podcast and where we believe the Lord was leading us. Clint had just finished work on a book on residency that he was excited about, that we were excited about. In fact, Thursday after lunch, like really the last meeting that we were all together in was a meeting about new churches and about the podcast. And we were kind of laying out with some other leaders there about how the Lord's been using this ministry, this site, this podcast, these articles, eBooks and things, and in courses, and where we see the future going. And we walked out of there really encouraged. Clint, me and I were talking about just, you know, where how the Lord had brought us to this point where we believe, you know, he was moving us forward. And I was as surprised and shocked as everyone else by Friday afternoon when the news came that in a sense that we didn't expect, he hadn't made it home, but in a sense that the Lord knew he home in a more profound way. So our team, you know, our team is of course working through this loss, and our hearts are grieving also for the family and for Colby and the church, and you know, you guys that knew him longer and better, and you know, wanting to honor him and honor the Lord in the way that we think about his legacy.
Yeah, and we debated how to what to do, you know, with the news here, just how to share with our podcast audience. We recognize that many of you, I mean, it did make the news at different sites. And so, but you know, most of you probably aren't reading electronic news sites. And so this is new news for many of you. We actually have several episodes that we're still going to release. We thought about how best to do this. We think Clint would want that. Matter of fact, we wanted, one of the ways we wanted to honor him was to talk about what mattered to him. And of course, we already started, and Colby shared some about his family, which was such a central part of his life. But we're going to talk some to you today, share with you today some of his thoughts from his book. He had two books, one that was already out, and one that we're going to still release. The first one was called Church Planting Thresholds, a Gospel-Centered Guide to Church Planting. And we're going to look at some quotes from that. And I think I'll actually ask Trevin and Colby to comment on those. And then he's got a new book that we're still going to be releasing. It's about residencies. It's how to start a residency, something he was really passionate about and interested in. They are sort of both relate to the person. I think that's probably worth noting. And so let me just read a quote from Church Planting Thresholds. It says, "Church planting is not just a sport for megachurches with multi-million dollar budget. I'm often asked how large a church should be when it begins to plant another church, or how much it costs to start a new church. These questions, as well-intentioned as they might be, are the wrong questions. Here's the right question. At what age and size is a church responsible to begin obeying the Great Commission in Matthew 28, 18 through 20? The Great Commission is the duty of every church, regardless of size, demographic, or budget." Even in the introduction, you were telling me, I didn't know this, Colby, when you said this, that you guys were going to Iceland together. Now, the first time I met you guys was about Iceland and your partnership that's there. And your church is not it's not a mega church. And yet, I mean, first of all, if you don't mind, tell us a little of the Iceland story, because I don't know that we've told it on the New Churches podcast, to my recollection. Tell us a little bit about the Iceland story, and then talk about how Pillar Church and the whole network is involved in church planning as Clint helped to launch some of those ideas.
Yeah, the work in Iceland began really around 2005 when Clint and I were on staff. He was kind of getting ready to launch Pillar Church out of Stafford Baptist Church, just here nearby in Northern Virginia. And I was a staff member there, and we shared offices. And the senior pastor was a good friend of ours, Bill Jessup, and we started looking into getting involved in work in Iceland. Just grew a heart for the need for new churches to be planted there. And we did crazy things in the early days of planting Pillar. Clint had been working at Pillar, planting it for about a year, and we sent him for 3 months to go to Iceland and live there, and then I preached at Pillar for those months, and then we flipped, and I went to Iceland, and we were just trying to meet people, praying for a church planner, trying to figure out what was going on there more deeply, and that's led to you know, 15 plus now 17 plus years of just continued work there between Pillar Church and Stafford Baptist and some of our real close partners, even to the point that one of our church planners, Gunnar Gunnarsson, is staying with me over these next few days as he comes in for the memorial service. It's been a big part of our work, and we were really looking forward to spending some time over there.
Yeah. And you weren't that, I mean, again, the church, I mean, dismissive of the church. I mean, I know your church, I know your ministry, but it's not a mega church. And here you are planting a church or partnering together with us, plant a church in Iceland. That's where I first met you. We were talking about ways to engage in church planting in innovative ways. And that's something that Pillar Church has been involved with the whole time. Yeah. I mean, it's you're planting churches that are planting churches. So how does a church your size get engaged and involved? I know part of it came from the passion that Clint had, but what does it look like to be planting churches when you're not, you know, just relying on the 2,000 church member church down the road?
Yeah. And our church right now is about 250 people. And we feel robust to be able to do the church planting work God has called us to, way more than in the early days when we were doing that. When I came back from Iceland, I lived in Iceland for a few years. I came back in 2010. You know, we were about 50 people when I came on staff as the preaching pastor. And that's when we started our military church planting project. And I think if you spend time around Pillar Church, you'll notice that it certainly was born out of Clint's passion, but it's something every member at our church embraces. I would face a mutiny if I turned us away from church planting. And that's so evident in these days as people have wanted to make sure to cement that legacy.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I liked was the clarity of honesty that Clint had. Let me read a quote. It says, this is again from Church Planting Thresholds. If you're going to plant a new church or lead your church to plant a new church, you will have to maintain a deep resolve to endure the difficulties ahead. Church planting requires an unwavering commitment to preach, pray, evangelize. And then this is the part that sometimes people miss, and stay. And that's one of the things that there was a tenacity about Clint that we, in fact, Trevin and I were talking about it. I guess Trevin, you and I probably called each other 5 times just about this. We were both very hard hit by this news. Sure. And one of the things we kept talking about is how Clint just kept at it. And that just seemed to be such a church planter characteristic. Talk to us a little bit about that as a need in church planting, but also too, maybe as you observed that with Clint.
Well, I think going back to the first comment that you read, Ed, and this comes out in what Colby's talking about with, you know, you mentioned the size of the church and the planting legacy that Clint had.
Yeah.
It really comes back to that assumption from that first quote that every church should be involved in church planting. Yeah. The assumption is not should we, could we, but the assumption is how couldn't we? Like why would we not? How could we not be involved? So I think that's that flipping of the perspective that Clint has, and that DNA that's in Pillar Church, that's in Colby, and that's what leads to that that kind of tenacity that we're talking about, and that that way that we're moving forward. And so I would say the passion and the consistency that Clint had on this matter is it's not just something he wrote in the book. Like he really believed churches need to be doing this, and that this is the church is the tool to do it. And someone called me just yesterday and said, it's a church planter in his 20s, and said he feels like one of Clint's grandchildren, not because he's that much younger than Clint, but because he was mentored by by a church planter who was mentored by Clint. So it's like the amount of influence is actually going way beyond what people might initially assume, in that the people that Clint sent out are actually now sending out their own as well.
That tenacity and sense that everybody should be involved in church planning, and just to get everybody involved, really was captured in his love for that G.K. Chesterton quote from What's Wrong with the World, where he says, if a thing is worth doing, it is worth doing badly. And really Chesterton's whole argument there and what Clint believed, it's similar to like my assignment is to be my kid's dad. There's not a better assignment. And I can't go get a professional dad to be my kid's dad. Just like every church has the assignment to do church planning, I can't go get a professional someone else and pay them to do the church planning work that my church or me as an individual I'm supposed to be involved in. So even if I'm not good at it, I should do it. And that's how he looked at it. Not only he felt that he deeply felt that way. He didn't think he was very good at it. And that was never a show. He felt like an amateur, and Chesterton's whole argument there is for amateurism, and rather than selling off to professionals, that there's just some things out of love we should do. And to Clint, the guiding factor was he loved God, and he really thought that church planning was the way to help others people discover that love and to love God themselves.
Yeah, no, so true. And so what was funny, you know, whenever somebody dies, you talk about the wonderful things. And there's a lot of wonderful things about Clint, but he was like really badly organized. And so
he was not a details person. Can we just say that? But like, this is the thing I'll say about working with Clint. With this role that he took on our team that when he joined a year and a half ago, he knew this was a stretch for him organizationally. Totally. And we would talk through it, and he would be like, hey, I'm really struggling on this part. You know, I tried to put people around him to help on some of that, to help channel that passion and that entrepreneurship to where he would be but he would say things like, I want to grow though in these skills. Don't make this easier. I really want to get better at this part. And so there was that fire of, I want to find things that I can improve. It was part of just the way he was.
You guys made me look bad because you jumped in when I was saying that. All I said was he was disorganized. My rest of my point was he was simultaneously indefatigable. I mean, he would just keep going and learning and trying. And I love that. You know, Trevin, I don't even know if I'm guessing you know this. You know, his degree was in music. I mean, it wasn't.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So we sat at a restaurant here in Murfreesboro when he came down with his team one time. And he told me about this whole back life of like worship music and like composing. And I'm just like, what? Who are you? Like that was the thing about Clint. There were these layers of genius. You'd unpeel another layer and you'd be like, well, good grief. Like that's part of the one thing that you never found with him was a pretentiousness.
Yep.
And I think that goes back to what Colby said. He didn't think he was great at it all. He just knew he was called to it all.
And so
there wasn't a sense of I'm all that, or give me a big platform, or let me be pretentious. Like it was what you see was what you got. He knew what his calling was. And I'll say, it's an honor when I think about the last week of his life. He was doing what he loved and what he was good at and called to the very last hours. And that to me says something.
This kind of comes back. You guys are tying in talking about his back life. You know, I mean, it's so many layers. I've known him for 21 years. I knew him for 21 years. And that at the core of Clint, and this played into church planning, is that life was an act of worship. It wasn't about effectiveness. It wasn't about the best way to do something or proving that you were great at it or showing the most fruit. Church planning for him was an act of worship more than a strategy. That's why he wanted everyone to do it. And that's why he never stopped doing it and never stopped learning. This was like, for him, it was the the sort of long walk that was a part of the gift that he was giving to God of just saying, this is how I want to honor you with my life. And so he had that artist. He was a worship leader. That's how I met him. He was the part-time worship leader at the church that I was on staff at. And we did worship together. And but that's where church planting came from. It was really from that heart of being a worshiper.
Oh, that's so good. I would add too, I think this is a lesson for all of our listeners too. We want to honor Clint, but also there's a lesson to take from his life. He was just continually willing to do it again, to get up again, do it again, start something again. And I don't know that, I mean, I'm guessing that most of you wouldn't know Clint unless it was for the New Churches podcast. That's probably where most of you interacted with him.
Right.
Wasn't pastoring a big church, wasn't speaking at a big conference. And yet, this is the kind of church planter that really makes a gospel difference. Now, you know, again, tell us real quickly, Cole, because I want to not, I mean, we could go on for a very long time, but like even the pillar church idea, the idea of these, you know, we have talked about this on the podcast about the marine focus kind of stuff. So that, even that idea, like I asked him once, I said, so you were a Marine? You have to understand that. Yeah. I mean, he didn't look like a Marine. Let's just put it that way. I don't look like a Marine. So where did that come from, and where has it gone? Even that idea that just following that Great Commission passion.
Yeah, maybe we can put it in the show notes. There's an incredible video I just saw today for the first time that the SBC of Virginia put together of a conversation he and I had in June about the beginning of this, what we call the Praetorian Project. And we talk about how it's an idea that really took shape out of mission. God called us to this Quantico area near the heart of the Marine Corps. And as far from being experienced in the military that either of us were, gave birth to this really crazy thing that has allowed us to plant nine other churches and five more in this next coming year or two in military communities, and to tie them together and network. And it looks like a brilliant gem, but really it was just really the kind of this, the way the heart for mission and context came together with opportunity and the willingness to just say, we'll do that, even though it sounds crazy. We stood up in 2011 and put this vision out to the church. I'd been on for about 6 months or something and said, we're going to plant a church near these four particular locations where 80% of the Marine Corps is located. And we thought that was going to be a career aspiration goal that it would take, you know, 20 plus years. You're talking about planting a church in Japan. We're talking about planting church in Southern California and Jacksonville, North Carolina, so that we could reach 80% of the Marine Corps. People could go from place to place. It was just this gem of idea that came from sitting with other Marines saying, where are you guys going next? How do we help you? And that's really what it was. It was, again, just sort of born out of this love for the people over and over. The stories that you're going to hear if you're meeting people is, Clint loved me in a particular way. And for the Marines we were meeting, it was, hey, I need to put a church where you're going.
Amazing. And again, it's that tenacity. He was indefatigable. And I think that resilience is the mark of the kind of person that is probably drawn to church planning, but I also think Clint modeled so much. Not a lot of flash, substance and ongoing willingness to do it again. And I think, you know, one of the things we mentioned from his book is Church Planting Thresholds. The other book that, Trevin, I'm not sure when does that, what's the status on publishing How to Start a Residency? What happens next?
Well, we were getting really close to having that done. He had just wrapped up. He had finalized the cover and the inside and whatnot. So our team is still, obviously our team has been kind of reeling this week, trying to figure out what we do and when and whatnot. But our hope is to have that out soon. Mm-hmm. And also to, you know, to be able to point people to the memorial fund that Pillar has set up as well for church planting. But the residency project was really a passion project of Clint. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, for Clint, it was the question that people would have about church planting was, where do I start? Yeah. Like, what do I need to be doing? And Clint would, the residency is one of the answers. Like, Clint, he would just say, like, this is the way you get going. And this is, and he actually, what I love about it is not like this really intricate, complicated system there. It's to have the ready leader, and to then begin pouring into them. And I mean, he would do this weekly. He would have a group of guys that he saw promise in and that he saw as ready and willing. And he would say, let me pour into these guys. And then, you know, as he would pour into leaders, some of those leaders would become church planters. So this is one of the, things that you would constantly hear him talking about. And the residency though, for him was the path.
Yeah.
How do we raise up church planters? Here's the pathway to begin having church planters, because one of the things you need is you need a leader who's ready to evangelize and to reach people who don't know Christ and to be able to begin forming communities.
Yeah, let me do a quote from the book, which it sounds like we're still in process, but when I'm a quote from it, it says, again, Clint writing, "I started a residency in the first year of planting our church. It was not expensive. In fact, it was free. It was not complicated. We studied the Bible and talked. It did not take much time, just 2 hours a week. I simply impressed," and he talks about how he kind of bring together potential church planters and help them to spend time studying the Bible with him and more. And he says, "I'm here to tell you there's no clearer path to gospel multiplication than planning for and starting a residency. It does not need to be complicated, expensive, or time-consuming. In many ways, starting a residency could provide the margin you have been longing for in the ministry." People partner that's there. Yeah. And I love that. And you guys have partnered together, Colby, for, I mean, a long, long time. And one of the things that I saw in the indefatigability, the resilience, the willingness to get up and do it again, try it again, led you to Iceland and the Praetorian Project and all those sorts of things, was raising up people, men and women who would be impacted and then multiply themselves. As we close, I want you to give us a story or kind of an example or kind of a path, and from Clint, but one that I think also hopefully will speak to other people that, I guess when I was talking to Donna, my wife, and Clint was just normal. I mean, I've met some church planters who are not particularly normal, and a lot of pastors are not particularly normal. Clint was a normal guy with a supernatural passion. And so much of that passion was multiplying in leadership. And so that's why the residency thing just makes sense. What did you see? How did he multiply himself and his passion and men and women that you saw?
Well, I mean, he believed deeply in people, like in ways that others wouldn't. The thing that, you know, we've had a couple gatherings over the beginning of this week, and over you hear the same thing. He saw something in me, despite of my flaws. And he just really tried to bring it out. And that's, you know, that's a quality that he had. I pray that God would just multiply that gift across the listeners, you know, here in our churches, to have that kind of hope. And then, he was always making bets with people. If you knew him, he loved to make funny bets with people, but that's because he was always betting on people. And he was betting on what they could become if they would apply themselves to it. And that came into the church planting realm and all kinds of other things. But what was unique about him is he didn't just bet on them. He was willing to put all of his skin in the game to prove that he was right. Mm-hmm. And that's what a residency was for him. I can remember coming back from Iceland and he was doing a residency with Roy Garza, and one of our early church planters, just a great guy and dear friend. And he said, Hey, Colby, I want you to do this week, residency with Roy. I said, all right, well, tell me more about this residency. And he said, oh, all I do is I kind of write an article of like 3 pages on some topic that I feel like talking to him about ministry, during the week. And then I sit down and I read the article with him and we talk. And, he said, I don't know what the other topics are going to be. So pick whatever you want. And so that was how simple it was to him. And I can still remember, I have the article, you know, I wrote that day to share with Roy. I can remember sitting at a Caribou Coffee in Fredericksburg with Roy Garza. And that was my first step into doing this myself. And I feel really natural at it now. But Clint taught me just how simple it was. And I think for the person listening right now, it's that simple. That's how he did it. And we always would laugh when people gave sort of accolades. Oh, this is great. Or, you know, Clint's awesome at this. And he was such a down to earth guy. He'd be like, man, if they only knew that all I did was wrote a couple articles and sat down and talked to people, you know, they would go try to come up with their own system.
Yeah. I think that passion combined with simplicity was one of the things that made Clint so effective. I'll just say, you know, as a teammate, I miss him already. There's been times this week where I've just thought about things and been like, that's what I would have talked to Clint about. I would have asked Clint about this. He was a depth of experiential knowledge, and you know, we don't understand the Lord's ways here, and we're going to feel this loss for a long time, and it's part of the nature of having questions about the mysteries of, you know, why God would allow this, why now and whatnot. But I know Clint's heart was to trust the good heart of the Father. And so that's what we want to do as we move forward.
It's a good word. I hope that we have honored him in our conversation today. Again, we are professional colleagues around his passion, which is church planting. So that's what we focused on today. I was thinking, I just moved to California for several months during my sabbatical, and we just lived down the road from a Home Depot. And I think their slogan is, you know, you can do it, we can help, or something like that from Home Depot. And I think that was kind of Clint's like way. And I think one of the things that Clint would want you to know is that he was a regular guy who just joined in an extraordinary mission following a powerful God into an essential task. And I wish you knew him like we'd got to know him. But he was, he would want you to know that it doesn't take you to be the most brilliant or the most articulate. It just takes showing up, doing it again, making much of Jesus and not making it about you. And so, Jennifer, we're grieving with you and the kids, and of course with Pillars Church and the whole network. There's so many that Clint impacted. We grieve with them, but we wanted in this episode to point you to the life, and we started briefly with that, but to the ministry passion that you might be encouraged. You know, the writer of Hebrews says to provoke one another to love and good deeds. I think Clint would be pleased if we provoked you to those love and good deeds today. Yeah. Thanks for listening to this episode of the New Churches Podcast. We're thankful for Clint Clifton, and we miss you, brother. Thanks. Hey, if you'd like to honor the legacy of Clint Clifton, particularly in and around church planting, I want to encourage you towards the Clint Clifton Global Church Planting Fund. It was actually a dream and aspiration of Clint's to generously fund church planters, remove barriers to pursuing God's call on their lives. And you know, over the years, Clint's passion for church planting has impacted church planting work in Metro DC through what's called the Send Network and something called the New City Network. He also partnered together in church planting throughout Virginia and then in military communities through the Praetorian Project, in Iceland through the Iceland Project, in Bali with Love and Grace Church, and thousands of communities through conversations and encouragement that really can never be measured. So the funds collected in Clint's name will be used to continue the legacy Clint began and give to the causes that he cared about deeply. To donate, and the link will also be in the show notes, you want to go to Pillar Dumfries. Dumfries is the name of the city. Pillar is the name of the church and the church network, the church that came out of the network. So it's Pillar, P-I-L-L-A-R, and then Dumfries, one word, Pillar Dumfries, DumFries.com/Clint. Again, that's Pillar Dumfries, DumFries.com/Clint.
You've been listening to the New Churches Podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.